Professor, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Hey, Church Planner, this is Pete Mitchell.
And this is Peyton Jones.
You know, I don't like looking at the top of my head in my Zoom camera because I feel like my hair is just not as thick and lush as it used to be.
But you have hair. That's great.
Yeah, but I don't want to look like Peyton.
Any hair is good hair. You know, it could be like Edge from U2. Do you realize that for like 30 years, maybe 40, that dude's always worn a hat ever since he went... Like, I've never seen his head since, like, the early days, like, back in, like, the war, you know, tour, maybe boy or whatever it was. But he's been wearing a hat ever since, or a bandana or a scarf. Yeah, Edge. Haven't seen that boy's head in a long time. And I wondered, could I be like that? Because I'm already kind of like Bono. Like, I have to wear glasses anytime there's any sun or whatever, so... not just because, you know, it's normal to wear sunglasses, but my tear ducts, they don't work right. So I don't get the moisture on my eyes right. So
I don't think that line has ever been said in the English language ever before.
What's that?
I don't get the moisture on my eyes right.
I don't, you know, I don't, the eye doctor told me, because one, you know how I always got those bags? It's because of that. I get blocked tear ducts because they don't produce the right mixture of salt, oil, and water. And she goes, yeah, just some people don't. And because I went in, my face blew up. It was like I had a giant, like the whole right side of my face was a giant, like bag under my eye. It was huge. And I woke up thinking I was dying one morning. And I go to the eye doctor. This isn't recent, by the way. It was like 5 years ago. And she goes, I walk in, you know, you got to walk around, your face is all blown up. Like everybody's looking at you like, you know, you're the elephant man. I am a human being. You know, you're trying to get people not to look at you and what have you. And if children look at you, you growl, you know. But she looked at me and smiled and said, I know exactly what that is. And then they did some tests and yeah, sure enough. So that's a thing. So, okay. But I could be like Bono and Edge at the same time. So I'm saying.
Well, yeah, I was telling Jamie yesterday, I go, I just look better with a hat on because I look younger. I was never a hat guy my entire life until the last couple of years. And now I'm like, yeah, now I'm a hat guy because I look younger.
Well, I'll show up on calls all the time and guys will be wearing hats. And I'm thinking it's like a fashion thing. Like you're not outside. Like guys our age want to look cool. And so they put hats on because it's like, I think older guys think, a hat is instant cool. And older guys, I'm just here to tell you, it's not.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You're just not cool.
No, I am cool. I'm cooler than all those guys without hat or with hats on. I'm without my hat. I'm still cooler than them. No. So I am an expert on cool. And I'm here to tell them, guys, you're not cool.
If you grew a full beard, you could be our Santa. Now, you'd be a white short Santa. I don't mean to be, you know, poking the short bear, but... I'm just saying, you could be Santa.
Yeah, but what color hair does Santa have, Pete?
It's white.
Checkmate, baby.
That's what I'm saying. Because I'm looking Santa, there at your goat.
Young Santa, like, was ginger. I don't know, buddy.
Go full. I keep telling Jamie, I'm like, dude, I'm gonna start growing my beard out.
You would make rad Santa.
I'm growing my beard.
You would make a rad Santa. And they make bomb, dude. Like, my buddy traveled.
First of all, puberty hasn't hit. So I can't grow a beard, which is why she doesn't want me to try.
Yes. We knew this about you, but I had a buddy that did that, and he was a new breed supporter. He made bomb. He would go travel over, I think it was Japan he was going to. Might have been China, Hong Kong. But he would come back loaded, and he was a good-looking Santa. You know, like you see, like, the Coca-Cola Santa on the commercial? He was that guy. You know, like a good looking, not your hobo Salvation Army Santa. I'm talking like,
don't you be knocking my Salvation Army Santa.
Hey, do you know what they get by? They're doing good. They're trying.
do we even know when this episode's airing? Like, what if it's airing in the middle of February?
Yeah, who knows, man? I think we're behind. So I think we're probably, oh, you're muted.
Yeah, I was coughing. Thanks.
Let
me mute again.
See, from where I was looking, it looked like you were actually like making a sound effect, like a ribbit, or, you know, I don't know. I mean, usually there's a 3-second delay. I don't know what you're doing.
Dude,
you know?
I really wish we had the soundboard back, but every time I spend money on it, I break it.
Yeah. Yeah. Back when we cared, right?
But yeah, back when I cared, for sure.
So, all right. So what's, I mean, it's kind of been a few weeks since we've actually, like, we keep interviewing people with books, and that's your favorite thing.
Yeah. Which I keep sitting there going, I am not doing Hardcore Church Planning Podcast again. He knows I'm not doing that. Why is he asking me to interview people? I have no idea who they are. And you're fanboying out on them. You're like, oh, it's so and so. Oh, I'm like, I didn't, no clue. No clue who this dude is.
Hey, we only get people on here if we think their book's cool. That doesn't mean I've read every single one of
them. We have so many people who reach out to us to interview their people.
Yeah.
Like so many PR firms. Oh, and this guy can talk about this. And I'm like, only if they send me like multiple requests do I even forward it to you.
Well, what I've started to notice is that some of these people that are reaching out, and this is so dishonest, it's AI. They've got some AI persona. This is not a real person. Like one guy sent us this this email. And
was it the one that was like all trying to be all cool and hip? And
yeah. And it was like, dude,
that was multiple emails we got from him.
Yeah. First off, that was AI. Second off, you're not even a real person. It wasn't a real firm. It wasn't a real person. They're trying to, you know, back in the day, Evel Knievel, you probably know this. Evel Knievel got himself from zero to hero by calling up local newspapers. Every time he was going to be in a city, he would call up and say, oh, you know, hey, have you heard of this guy? You know, he's going to be jumping cars. And then he'd call and say, hi, there's a guy jumping cars. Did you hear about him? And he called the same number and do about 10 different fake voices. And the newspapers are like, man, like, we're getting calls off the hook about this. It's a motorcycle guy. We should go cover this. That's how he built his, that was his PR campaign. It was just a call. Well, I'm sorry, man, but if you're using AI to call me to get in front of leaders and you're lying, you're creating fake people and trying to, like, dude, go rethink your life. Like, please don't write books. Please don't become a public figure. Like, that's not right. I don't mind if you take, like, your own thoughts and run them through AI, make them sound better because you're not a good writer. I don't care about that. That's fine. But don't be creating like PR firms and fake people to try to get me to read your book and then tell me how great you are. And then because I sniff AI out, I go look you up and you've got like 20 followers. Like, no, you're not. Like, because there was a bunch of fluff and a bunch of just bull crap on one of them. And when I looked it up, I was like, that's just so dishonest, you know? So, sorry, you got me on a soapbox.
That's interesting. So, you looked up the firm or who?
Yeah, I looked up that guy. Remember, I wrote you back and said, hello, AI, you know, yada, yada. And I that guy went and looked. If you can find that email from me, go check it out.
No, I mean, I don't really care, so.
He had sent a thing of him speaking to an audience, and it was clear there was no audience, and it was from like 8 years ago or something like that. So it was like, dude, this is a PR firm would never do this. They would say, go see. Don't get me started. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, I see it.
Yeah. It was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. I mean,
now you got me all salty.
I was like, whatever. I don't know. I don't really care. Because I just push it off onto you anyway. So.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Well, because I wouldn't interview anybody, really. I mean, I would, I guess, a few people, but not that many.
So, yeah, there's a lot going on with young people, man. Like,
I'm watching. You know, it's really interesting to me to see what's going on with. I don't even know what to call it. I mean, Christianity. I don't know if that's even the right term, because it's really like the pendulum has swung, right? And now it's cool to be Christian again.
Yes, and this is what
I'm a little bit like. I'm leery of it. Like I look at it and I'm like, I don't know that it's legit Christianity so much as it's cool to claim you're a Christian, right? It's like the pendulum has swung.
The pendulum has swung. It's done this. The reason you're leery of it is you've been through this before. We've seen this. What happens if the Spirit of God truly works? Many people come to faith. There's clearly something going on. And then Jesus said the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed, right? Smallest little seed. Then it grows overnight and it becomes one of the biggest trees out there. He says so much so that even the birds can nest in its branches. And the birds would be like false teachers, weirdos, charlatans. Birds are always bad in every single one of Jesus' parables, right? And so we got birds in the branches, you know what I'm saying? Like you start getting all these weird people who are tying reptilians and Nephilim and, you know, all kinds of weird stuff. The flat earth, they all come out. All the weirdos come out. All the conspiracy theorists come out.
Okay, but the moon is hollow. We both know it.
Being well, someone's got to operate it. Clearly, reptilians. Who are Nephilim? No, just joking, guys. Disclaimer: we do not believe this. But the fact is that then what happens is every Tom, Dick, and Harry is out there popping off, right? Just popping off all this weirdo stuff, and then the scandals start falling. Because the wrong people were talking all the time, because it's created this opening. This is the cycle. And then once all the scandals start happening, like these prominent people start to fall, who have been popping off and getting a bunch of airtime, then it begins to bring Christianity back into disrepute. And then Christianity, our influence, because biblically our influence suffers when our witness suffers. So right now you don't have that, but you'll start seeing it. You know, people start all of a sudden bringing the gospel into disrepute, as Paul says, and then it'll go back. This is cyclical, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it, man, because I look at it all and I'm like, interesting. Like we talked about this before, so I don't want to beat this dead horse, but all the podcasters that are like really looking at other Christians' podcasts, prominent Christians, and then they find one thing that they don't agree with, and they just, oh, this is why he's not following the Bible anymore. And it's like, dude, okay, first of all, we're not talking about a salvation issue. You look at the guy's heart, and I'm like, dude, no, the guy's heart is to follow Christ. Mm. Totally. And he's exploring something, an area that's not clear. And I don't care what you say. It's not clear. Like, I'm not even going to bring up what it is, but I was just like, it's not clear. I understand we have tradition in Christianity where we believe in something, but that's tradition. Tradition right. is not the same as God said it. It's like, this is just something that we've kind of held on to as a, so I don't care that the guy is like his salvation message is the same. He's solid on that. And usually, like in this case, it's like exploring one of the topics of hell. And I'm like,
yeah,
dude, like it ain't clear. It ain't 100%.
Oh, I
like,
know what you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah,
it's like, get off of it. Like, why do we got to go out there and make podcasts to make ourselves look better when I can look at this other guy and be like, no, dude, his intent, like his heart is in the right spot. And I don't have a belief one way or the other. I mean, I guess I probably have a belief, but I don't really care one way or the other.
Yeah. No, I got you. You know, it's funny because it goes back to that whole thing, right? Like the character is an issue on all of this. Like if you're, you know, what we're saying about, going back to the AI and the scandals, it's why the character matters, right? Character is something that your habits have built long before the spotlight finds you, right? It's what's inside. I like what Gary Vaynerchuk said a few years ago, where he said the internet hasn't changed who we are. It just reveals who we truly are.
Yeah.
So if you put yourself on platform and you're the person who is always out there fighting everybody on Facebook and being, all you're doing is just amplifying. Social media amplifies who you really are,
yeah.
Right? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so all that is like a microphone, an amplifier to your heart. If speaking shows who your heart is, I think social media, because you've got this anonymity, the real you comes out. A lot of the filters are gone. You're hiding behind a keyboard. You're on the other side of a screen. It's like when people will flip you off in a car, whereas they won't face to face in a grocery store, right? There's this barrier that kind of the real people starts to come out, right? And so what I would say is that it really does all go back to character on this. And if your character isn't what it should be, you really have no business platforming yourself. And I know that sounds weird to people nowadays, because we're so used to like fast tracking platform before character. But like, go back to the Bible, like Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount, he actually deals with platform and character. He blasts the Pharisees for going out on the street corners and amplifying, you know, their good, oh Lord, I'm so good. And they're praying in front of people, doing their good works before men, platforming themselves when the character wasn't there. You know, Jesus platformed himself, by the way, and Paul platformed himself, and everybody, you know, Paul talks about, and we've chatted about this in Corinth, that he talks about our brother who is famous for preaching the gospel. There's nothing wrong with being a big preacher. You know, Tim Keller, thank God for that dude. Lloyd-Jones, Spurgeon. Spurgeon was a superstar in his day, but he had the character. And he had his focus on Christ. And going back to what you said, you know, Paul, when he sees other people out there doing stuff, he says, you know, look, some people do it out of selfish motive and selfish ambition. And let's be honest, none of us has completely pure motives. I'm sorry. You dip your toe into social media waters or even like a podcast like this. We've talked about this. Even stepping into the pulpit, at times your motives are mixed. Where you're going to platform you, or you're going to platform Christ. And I think at the end of the day, Paul just said, you know what? some are out here to platform themselves and others are there to platform Christ. Either way, he says, Christ is preached. He's still proclaimed, you know? So he leaves it. It's almost like he just leaves it to God there. But he's hoping the message gets out. But,
you know, it's interesting you say social media just kind of, the term that I would use, it makes you more of who you already are.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, like with my background in business and the types of businesses that I've been in, that's one of the things that we used to always say about money. Money makes you more of who you already are.
Mm.
And if you are already a generous person, but now you're making a lot more money, then your generosity increases. If you are already stupid with money, but now you make more money, you're just stupider with a lot more money. Like, it just really shows more of who you are, because there's like, you know, you could see it in the money side. And in some ways, I would even say that in a lot of ways, specifically with alcohol, alcohol will make you more of who you already are. Like when people get drunk and they're a total dirt bag, it's like you always were a dirtbag. It's just now there's no filters between you and
right.
Showing off how bad you are. And at the same time, there are those that will get drunk and they're like the happy drunk, the funny drunk. It's like, yeah, that's who you were before. It's just there's no filters in between that.
Alcohol just takes away your inhibitions.
Yeah, it does, right? And I mean, I have no idea on any of the other drugs because I've never even touched marijuana. So, I mean, I couldn't even speak to that. But so it's interesting you say that about social media, because I'm like, yeah, so maybe that's just one more thing that I can look at and go, it's going to make you more of who you already are. Because like I've got one friend who He was meeting with one of my business partners, my business partners who you've met. And we were meeting with him, and my business partners are really into Facebook. Like, they use Facebook really to build up their whole business. That's where they communicate with people, using Messenger, their Facebook groups, right? Like, it's a big thing to them. And so we're meeting with this guy, friend of mine, for a business thing. And they're like, "Oh, are you on Facebook?" He's like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, okay, yeah, we'll friend you." And as soon as we like hang up, he calls me up and he goes, "Just so you know, I'm not friending them." And he goes, "I've got my Facebook so locked up." He goes, "Because I am like very political on there. Like, I don't hold anything back." And he's like, "So I'm very careful about who I let into my Facebook friend circle."
Interesting.
Because I don't want to like, and so it's funny. You're talking about social media. It makes you more of who you already are. At least he was smart enough to know I have no filter, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just not going to let people into this side of my world. But yeah, you know, you're right with social media. It, you know, the guys who are like looking for fame, and I understand the looking for fame, because in some respects, you need to have some sort of, I don't know that you need to have some sort of notoriety, but the more notoriety you have, the more sales you can make, and the more sales you can make, the more money you can earn, right? Yeah. So, I mean, that's, I understand.
And as a Christian, you got to ask yourself the question, what do I need more of? Do I need more notoriety, or do I need more character? Some people think Paul just worked with his hands, and he did, but he also raised funds. Don't believe me? Check out Philippians 4, 1 Corinthians 10, and Romans 15. In fact, when the kingdom of God catapulted forward, there was usually a kingdom-minded businessman or woman behind it, like Priscilla and Aquila. If you're going to raise funds, though, do it well. Our partners, Reliant, can help you put rocket fuel in your fundraising tank. I wish I'd had this when I was church planning. But Reliant can partner with you to get you the training and coaching you need to raise that support, as well as provide you with employment services you may need, like payroll, health benefits, and more. To learn more, check out Reliant.org/CPP. And if your character's in place, go for it. Blow yourself up. That's great. But if you don't have the character and you blow yourself up, and you detonate in the negative way, you're going to take out a lot of people with you. And that's the damage that's done with, you know, as we head into the scandals, and it's inevitable, but you know, like, it's where we go back to, oh, well, that's not real Christianity, or that's not, you know, that's where we go, you know, when all this happens, as we start singing that tune. Right now, And I always hate this too. There's a kind of in your face. Whereas like 2 years ago, nobody was posturing themselves like that. People were a little more humble. And I get that there's a boldness that comes with it being filled with the Spirit, but not a brashness, right? Not being a jerk. And people need to know there are people out there who do it extremely well, who are very humble and yet provocative. And I always respect that. Daniel Yang always comes to mind on that. Brad Briscoe comes. These are some of my friends, you know, that I respect how they do what they do. Then there's other people I'm like, you know.
The shark.
Yeah. I'm just like, you know, that's not really good. That's not what I would choose, you know. It's not even John the Baptist, because John the Baptist, I don't think, was a jerk, you know. When he took on the Pharisees, that was more prophetic, and it was very unpopular to do so, you know.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, that's just my take, but we should probably get into our topic, eh?
Yeah, what is our topic?
Our topic today is when people leave. Now, before we get out, it's like when your Pete, you know, he leaves for Texas, leaves you alone in Southern California. How do you deal with that?
I remember when we were leaving Refuge, I deliberately did not say anything before we left, because you guys always, well, I don't think you'd already left.
Every time I try to get out, they suck me back in.
Well, they always make it a big deal. Oh, so-and-so's leaving, and blah, blah, blah. You know, and it was like, and I was like, no,
We just. They did?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were always cool, like when people left.
Not
bad mouth
in a negative way. It was almost like you were sending them off.
Oh, I got you.
And I'm we're gonna disappear out the back door. One Sunday we're there, the next Sunday we're not there anymore.
That is true. I know. I had to keep checking, and I thought you were joking. You're like, yeah, man, that building has no AC.
No, but that wasn't the reason we left.
Uh-huh.
We left because at the time there were like my kids were the kids program.
Yeah.
And I was like, I do not want my kids to hate church the way I hated church.
You're the only person that felt safe bringing your kids to that church, I think, because.
Well, literally the next week there was an explosion of kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I was like,
okay. You've never told me this.
I was like, okay, this is like God wanted us to move on. And that was our reason, right? Like I needed more kids for my kids.
I could see that.
And then the next week it was like tons of kids. I was like, and it was just funny to me because I'd watch it week after week. I'm like, yeah, now all the kids are there.
If I'm honest, Dustin needed you more.
He did. And he liked me.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that just shows how much he needed you. So, and by the way, everyone, his name was Justin, but Dustin, I was waiting for Beat to say his name's Justin. Dustin. And I called him Dustin just to diss on him. And it was funny. He was a listener of the podcast. And he was a really nice dude. I was happy for him.
No, I remember telling him one day, I was like, we saw him actually at one of the community events. The church had a booth at it. And I went up to him. I'm like, oh, hey, yeah, just so you know, we're going to start going to your church in January. He's like, really? I'm like, yeah, because we'd only visited it once, a couple months before. I was like, yeah, we're going to start going there. Just so you know, we'll be there.
Yeah, well, you know, people leave and it's not always a bad thing, you know, and I don't say that with
hold on a second. Great Scott, it's time for this week's topic.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty. So, okay. So sometimes, you know, there's a saying in the zoo. Sometimes people just leave. It's not a good saying. Many of you won't get that reference, but the reality is
that I have no idea what reference that's to.
People leave your church, and that could be your core team. In fact, people often leave a core team. That's when you're probably going to see a lot of churn. And when the core, and we'll talk established and core team and when things are developing. I think when someone leaves a core team, it can be almost devastating depending on who the couple is. There will be people who leave a core team and it'll rock you. Like it'll gut check you and you'll have to kind of lean up against a wall, look up to heaven and ask the Lord, do you still want me to do this? And then there's other people on your core team. You're like, you know what? They were just here to help. And I think that's the best way to think about people. People aren't your possessions. They're not your property. You don't own them and you don't call them. People with a church plant kind of have a sense of mission when they join it. They know this is not normal. This is like me going on a mini mission. And there's something kind of exciting about that. And sometimes people get a taste of that and they're like, I'm good now. That was cool. And then they go somewhere else, or like Pete, they have different needs, but they were glad to have been a part of it for a time. And I think when you're young, and not as mature, you make the church plant all about you and you take, anyone leaving as personal rejection of you. And that's not the way it is. The reality is that, people have legit reasons for leaving. And if they want to leave, why would you want them to stay regardless of their reason? Like the key is to let them go. And we'll talk about how you do that and how you handle that. But Pete, any thoughts on that? Cause I mean, just the, you know, we present it as a problem. It's not always a problem.
Well, you know, I find it interesting because just as you were saying that, you know, you let them go. I remember it's a funny thought to me. Cause I'm like, why would I care if someone wants to leave?
I'd
be like, I'm like, okay, wait a second. If I'm in the pastor's shoes, he's getting his income from the church. You kind of see it as like a loss of tithe. whether or not it is, right? Because you may
no, because what know. You say when they're exiting is you're still going to tithe, right? Like you say that, of course. No, I'm teasing, guys. Don't take that serious.
But you know what? Like, so I'm like, okay, it's probably different for someone where it's like their identity is much more wrapped up in the church plant. Like, I've been a part of church plants, but my identity is not wrapped up in it. Like, I really like the church we go to right now, but my identity is not wrapped up in it. Like, I volunteer at it, you know, everyone knows who I am, though. But it's like, whatever.
It's a part of your life. It is not the heart and soul of your life. For a pastor, it's a heart and soul. It's everything to them.
Yeah.
So they're seen as like, you know, it's like you quit a baseball team to them. It's less that you stop going, like, you know, if they're in a movie house and we're all watching the same movie, to a church planter, and this is legit, right? Maybe to an established church, it is like watching the movie. To a church planter, it's more like, but we're a team. Like, you were on my team. Like, I don't have anyone to cover, you know, shortstop or, you know, left field now. Look at me. I used a sports reference. Is there something going around? Am I sick? I'm checking my forehead. I don't feel different. Use a sports analogy. That was crazy. But, you know, but it really is like a team. And, you know, and when I say let them go, I thought you were going to take it up on it. That's just weird because you don't own them. You don't control them. And we have to remind each other of that because in a religious circle, the Pharisees were very controlling. And you can see that where they like excommunicate the man born blind. They were like the Gestapo, man. They come, hey, what are you doing? And pastors can do that. Like that is dysfunctional leadership. Whenever you shepherd someone, you shepherd them for their good, not the church's. So in other words, you might be like, oh, hey, the church. Ask what's good for them. Like, it's probably good for them. Like, they might be cluing in. Like, for some people, it could be, hey, you know, the distance, the church moved. Or, you know, it could be, hey, my kids want to go here. You know, and there's a youth group there. And we just feel at this time in our life, we're kind of letting our kids down. There's not really anything for them here in the church plant. And guys, I got to say, that's legit. Excuse me. Well, that's a legit thing. And they may feel that they're failing their kids, like Pete, like exactly what you said about our kids. And you have to understand anyone who's with you has made a sacrifice. There are things they're sacrificing to be there. And that's been good for them. And but when they decide to leave, you don't guilt them. You don't say, oh, you're just going to go to a comfortable air-conditioned church now, are you, Pete? You don't do that. You literally, and you know, I listened. I was like, okay, you know, like, are you sure?
I think you'd already left. So it was like,
I think I had come back to the transition. I was still kind of on and off back and forth. Not often. I had left. You're right.
No, you had left like official. Like,
yes.
Pastor of the church.
And I was helping with the transition into the new place, Revolution. It was Recreation Park, wasn't it? That one, yeah, that, yeah. Recreation Park. Which, like you said, minus the AC, was a rad building. But what I would say is that here's kind of the rule. You have a chat with them. When they disappear, you find, like, you don't just let people go, because that's actually kind of messed up. They've been there, they've been doing that, and like Pete, they might just be embarrassed, they might, but make it the best conversation you ever. Just say, hey, you know what, guys, I noticed you hadn't been here, I just want to check everything's okay. Oh, hey, we've left. And sometimes be aware that in order, because people feel so guilty leaving, sometimes they project onto you, and they get angry. They're angry. So they're like, rather than feeling guilty, they find fault so they can justify and not feel guilty. It's part of our denial mechanism. And so sometimes people will attack you. Well, I just found you're preaching this and that. And what you do is you just say, you know what? Okay, I understand. I'm sorry that you felt that. But can I just tell you were a blessing the whole time you're here. And I want to just pray for you and wish you well. And thank you for joining us while you were here. You're part of something really special, and I'm going to pray that you go and bless the congregation you're at. You just let them go. And then what you don't, obviously you tell your leadership, but you have a rule with your leaders that we will never speak against this person after they've gone. We had a rule that when people would come and ask a leader, how come so-and-so left? We wouldn't give our take. We wouldn't say, oh, well, they this or that, you know. We would say, you know what? You should go ask them. And then all of a sudden now, because what people used to is leaders being super protective and defensive and acting out of fear that they're going to lose other people too. I would just say, go ask them.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh. And then they might go talk to them. And guess what they remember? The people they go talk to remember me being super gracious and saying, oh, he sent us with his blessing. Like, he was so cool. I thought he was going to be mad. He prayed for me and thanked me for being a part of the church plan. That starts creating a culture that it's okay if you want to leave. And we've all heard of churches where it's like a sinking ship and the pastor's like, you know, trying to sink all the lifeboats, you know, like keep everyone on. They're like, no, the church is fine. Church is fine. You can't leave, you know? And it starts becoming cult-like. Don't ever do that. Like have some dignity, like self-dignity, you know, use some integrity. Don't lower yourself to becoming desperate to keep people, you know, just, it's weird.
Yeah, no, that's, man. And I think it's because, okay. So in business, like when I was a financial planner, I had my own agency and it's in some respects, it's kind of like a church in that no one's an employee. They're all independent contractors. I can't make anyone do anything, right? It's like I can threaten them with their job. They don't have a job. You know, they don't go do anything. They don't make any money. That's all there is to it, right? It's not like they're sucking up my time. But when people would leave, to me, I was always just like, yeah, all right, whatever. Because, I mean, in my mind, I was probably like, yeah, they couldn't cut it.
Yeah.
You know, because it was hard, right? Like yeah. When it's not a job, when it's, you know, commission only, that's a tough gig. You got to wake up every day and actually get to work. You got to do stuff. It's not like you can just go dial it in, go to your job and be like, I don't like my job, but still give me my paycheck, right? It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
But so that's why for me, I look at it, I'm like, yeah. You know, and if they were like, oh, you know, you didn't give me what I needed, right? Because I was the leader. In some respects, I'd be like, okay, I need to hear this because maybe there's something here I need to learn from, right? There's always some little nugget that I can benefit from hearing. But at the same time, too, I also realized, yeah, you're right. I'm not right for everybody. Like a lot of people, like in my case specifically, I am not one to micromanage people. Right. Like, it's not my strength. I am not a good manager because what I've discovered over the years is that most people need a micromanager.
Yeah.
And I'm not that guy because I don't like being micromanaged. So I don't like doing it to other people. And I'd just be like, yeah, all right, I'm probably not right for you. I'm probably not a good fit for you. You need to go somewhere else. And of course, I can usually look at people and be like, but you also don't do anything. So I don't care where you go. You still ain't going to get what you're looking for. Like, you got to actually do stuff, right? So that's why for me, I just look at it and be like, yeah, just let them go. I mean, how many hundreds of agents over the years that I have worked for me and maybe, you know, three of them stuck for any significant length of time.
Right.
And it's just, you know, so, I mean, I just kind of look at it like, you know, I'm just doing my gig, right? I got to do what I'm supposed to do. But I get that it's different for a pastor because like you said, it's their whole life, right?
Yeah. But, you know, we're not there to use people. We're there to pour into people. And I always kind of saw it that whatever time you spent with us, you were sent out as a missionary afterwards. Like it was training for you. Go bless the next people you're going to be with, you know, take what you learned here and, you know, but the other thing, and I didn't say this earlier, that's really important is to make sure you tell people, hey, you know what? We don't have childcare, at the moment, or we don't have youth group, But one day we probably will. And I just want to let you know, like, you are 100% welcome back, like, at any time. But especially if we get to a point where we have that, please come back and visit us sometimes. Everybody loves you here. Every once in a while, when you don't want to make the drive or whatever, like, come back and visit. And people would, you know, people would leave and they would come back and visit and everybody would be all excited. Because we didn't badmouth them. We did, you know, we made it a good thing. Hey, they're gonna, you know, like, we didn't announce from the front, but, you know, when it came up, we're like, oh, you know, we're really happy for them, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, but what it's not smoke and mirrors. It's not you being a spin doctor. It's how I honestly felt. Like I said, there would occasionally be people I'm like, oh, it's tough to lose them. It was tough to lose Jimbo. It was tough to lose some people. And at that time we were sending them out anyways, and they would take our best people. Right. And we're like, ah, you know, notice you never went out. So I did not include you in the four or five buckets of people that went out, Pete.
No. Yeah, as you shouldn't.
I remember I used to say, oh, my first stringers are gone. My second stringers are gone. My third, you know, and that's so insulting to the people who stayed behind, because it really was to me.
I must have been fourth string because I never left. And you said,
well, me too, man. Like literally, it's not fair to say that, but I do think it was a degree of development. And there are people who stay, who need to stay, who are like cornerstones. And I do think you were one of those where certain people need to stay for a time because they have the DNA. They just have the DNA so solid. And you want those people to continue to flavor the church. But yeah, I mean, you know, and you don't have more than one conversation, right? You're not their pastor anymore. But like I said, when it's established, it's a little easier to take. But when it's real small and it's getting off the ground, just see them as rotating, like the Lord rotated them in, he's rotating them out. There will be other people come in, trust me, that will be just as cool, if not cooler, that the Lord will bring in. And if he's with you, just keep looking to him, because Paul did nothing but shuffle all of his people all over the middle, you know, the Mediterranean. Literally, Romans 16 are his best people that he's writing, like, hey, greet so-and-so. There's like 30-something names in there. And he's just writing to him going, hey, so-and-so, you know, receive so-and-so. They're the best, you know. Paul's just praising all these people that he worked with at a time. And that's actually how you build networks, right? And you spread what you're doing. So I feel like I'm missing some key stuff here. But, yeah, I mean, that's what I got for you.
Yeah, no, I think it's just a good reminder more than anything else, because you're right. Like, I can totally see, you know, when you're church planning, it is your world. I don't care if you're Bivo, whatever. It's like, this is what you feel God has called you to. So I could see the loss for sure. Right. I get it, you know, and, oh, we're not good enough yet. I got to keep people. But at the same time, I think that's why it's so important to look at the church in a more first century way.
Yes.
Right. As opposed to our modern system, like here in Texas, you know, if you don't have 500 people at your launch, you're not a real church.
Yeah.
Like, that's not right.
Right.
But it's a cultural thing. And it's,
dude,
you know, but it,
that high school stadium near that hotel that I stay at there, just like on the other side of the freeway. It's like millions. I heard it was like $1 billion they spent on that thing.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy.
Even our church, like, because we just moved into a brand new facility. I don't know what they paid for everything, but I know the only reason why they were able to do a lot that they did is because they sold their old property, and they sold it at market value, which was a lot.
Yeah.
Like multiple millions. And they were able to use that to help them buy it, you know, the new facility and build out the new facility and stuff like that. But, you know, yeah, it's a different, like, if your goal is gospel expansion, like that's the focal point. The hardest part, though, is I think we're so used to making a living off of the church. And that's why it hurts us so much. You know, what do I do if I can't get paid this month?
Yeah.
Or, you know, my health insurance, I can't cover that. Or, you know, and that's where I think it starts to really change things. Whereas if we stay being bivocational, like I remember talking to Vinny one time, our good friend who's been a pastor right now. He's doing real estate and he's doing phenomenal in real estate. I remember he and I were talking one time. And one of the things he said is he goes, look, when I go back to ministry, I will never take a paycheck again.
Yeah.
He goes, I will do it because it's ministry, but I'm making my money outside of it. And the freeing up that it does, like even look at Rick Warren, right? Like when all of a sudden he was able to go, you know what? Here's everything you've ever paid me. I'm giving it back to you. I'm staying on as the pastor and you're not going to pay me. Like there's a freedom there.
Absolutely. And you kind of hit on something that's what I was forgetting. When somebody comes and says, hey, we don't have a youth group, your temptation at that moment is to quit, go out and hustle and build and start a youth group. That's a distraction. Do not do that. You stick to what the Lord. Now, it could be a case that you've known you've needed to start a youth group, and that is what the Lord's called you to do, and you've been dragging your feet, and those people are like an impetus. Like when they say that, you say, you know what? We're starting it. I would, in that case, you can ask, look, I know the Lord has been asking me to do this. I'm going to do it. I've been dragging my feet. I've been distracted. I've been this. Will you give me another, like, however long it is, you know, whatever you need. But they might say yes, they might say no. But do not get, if it comes out of left field and you're like, oh, I really like these people, I want to keep them, and it's taking you off mission.
We need a singles group.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, we don't talk about the Nephilim enough here, you know, and the reptilians and the end times. You know what? Stay away. Stay away from it. Don't let other people dictate. Like if you start getting in that habit of being a people pleaser, you're never going to get out of it, right? If you build the church on people pleasing, you're gonna be a people pleaser till the day you die, and you won't make it. I'm just saying, that's when people start blowing up their ministries, detonating them. That's when people start having affairs. Like, it becomes something where you are no longer listening to the Lord and following his leading and guidance. So that would be my final caution. Like for me, I've kept my core team in the house for almost two and a half years, man. And like, we have to get out now. Like, if I do not get my core, and you know, part of it was we knew we were going over, like we were going about a year and a half, years maximum normally. But for a year and a day, I had to write discipleology. Cha-ching! And, you know, I would never do that ever again. But what I did in Refuge Long Beach was launch them out after 3 months of prep. I wouldn't do that again either. So there's things that I've done on both sides where it's, I mean, basically I could say 3 months and 3 years. Don't do it. Don't try this at home, folks, you know. But I know my next thing is to get into a building. Like, that is my key, is to get us into, because we can't grow in the house anymore. And people are just chomping at the bit for mission, because we keep them on mission. But they're like, Peyton, we want to bring, but like, where are we going? We're losing the momentum. And you can't keep riling people up for mission and have them sitting around forever. So that's a thing for me right now, where my one thing is to get us the heck out. So like Andrew is fasting today. I've got a friend who's just a highly prophetic prayer warrior praying for me right now. And I've just asked the entire church to pray right now with me. And that's the thing, is if you're delayed on something you need to do, get the church praying about it. Like, inform them, talk to them. Hey guys, like, let's go back to the youth group. Hey guys, you know, those of you who know, we're going to ask you to pray this week. We're going to be spending time as a prayer, as a leadership, as a team, starting to get things going and praying and seeking the Lord. Like, bring your people into it so they start to feel the vision again. Renew that, but get them in front of God. right? Talking about that. Don't have them just hanging on you. Get them seeking the Lord. Get the whole church praying for that. Now, that could be a whole nother topic, but that's how we do that. So with that, I am out of time. But you know, Pete, while you're doing all this praying and you're doing all this talking to people leaving, one thing you should tell them on the way out that would really help them is how to do their bookkeeping. And tell them, take this message with you to your next church. They're going to need to know about that.
Tell them to go to simplifiedchurch.com.
That's right. Simplifiedchurch.com. Be sure to tell your pastor when you go to that next church, he needs to use simplifiedchurch.com because, hey, I may be busy and distracted, but I'm nowhere near as busy and distracted as if I didn't have simplifiedchurch.com. Well, that'd be a train wreck.
And remember, if you want to reach the ones that nobody's reaching, you need to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.
Yes, that was an all-time worst lead-in segment ever. I think we finally achieved it.